Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm really glad you could join me tonight. Tonight, I have something nice to share with everybody. As you know, I research all the time about bullying, and most of the time, I find really tragic stories and details about kids from all over the world, adults from all over the world who have been hurt in some way or hurt someone else. So I read the other night some stuff from a gentleman, and I thought there must be more about that online, so I went digging today. And I found a free website. It is www.bulliestobuddies.com. Bullies and Buddies are capital B's and no spaces between Bullies to Buddies and then .com. It is the same kind of an idea that the gentleman talked about on the first website that I found, the Golden Rule. And instead of coming up with a lot of rules, this gentleman says it's the empirical solution, which means it's a solution that's derived by observation. And if you remember, I talked about that the other night. I talked about being the adult that watches, sees what's going on, and comes up with solutions by really being aware of what's going on during any of these kind of altercations or transactions or anything that's going on in the schools or in your own family. So this young man, his name is Izzy Kalman, and he did this and put this website together to help to make a difference. And it's a psychology blog, and it's called The Psychological Solution to Bullying. The modern world is trying so hard to find a solution for the suffering of victims of bullying. And we are doing it by trying to pass school anti-bully laws, as though a law can actually make bullying disappear from schools. In fact, now pressure is being put on the U.S. Congress to do something about bullying. But how can Congress make bullying disappear from schools when anti-bully programs have a dismal success record? And does Congress even know how to get rid of bullying within Congress? Good question. The truly ironic thing is that the solution has been known for thousands of years. It is called wisdom. All wisdom is about using our brains to understand and solve problems. Expecting the government to help us by protecting us from bullies and by punishing them for us is not wisdom. It's foolishness. And this is the basis of my approach, to provide people with the wisdom to solve their own problems. That this has become a revolutionary approach to bullying is mind-boggling to me. This is supposed to be the very basis of the psychological helping professions. Anyway, every once in a while, I get a wonderful letter from someone who has benefited from the free material on my website. I created a website, www.bulliestobullies.com, so I could provide the simple, age-old solution to bullying to those who are suffering. And nothing makes me happier than to see that it is accomplishing its mission. A few months ago, I featured one such story. You can read it here at the psychologytoday.com/blog/thebully-witch-podcast. Hunt /200902/website saves victims bullying. I'll copy that and put it on my Facebook page, everybody. More recently, one of my blog readers who identifies herself as a concerned parent wrote a comment that was so well written and expresses just about everything I've been trying to teach about the wrong and the right way to deal with bullying that I believe it deserves to be read by all my blog readers. I left out a couple of sentences that I felt weren't particularly relevant to the story. I am happy to offer my experience, the basis of empirical evidence. My son attends a large magnet school for the academically talented kids. The first year he was bullied, I reported it to the vice principal, who said, in no uncertain terms, that he would take care of it. He handled it according to policy. They have a whole school policy, and things grew worse. For now, not only was the group of eight other boys bullying him, but they let other kids know that they had gotten in trouble for it. Soon other kids joined in to bully him, and along with them, an administrator who felt that my son deserved to be bullied. One thing administrators don't get is that bullied kids often look as if they are troublemakers because they are responding to being punched in the back, stabbed with pencils, books thrown to the floor, etc. In fact, this teacher started viciously bullying my son herself. Then I had to intervene with her and threaten action. She got quite out of hand with her bullying. When this happened, she mocked my son one last time and warned other teachers that my son was a troublemaker. So then he was labeled by teachers and ostracized and bullied by kids, and it mushroomed and mushroomed out of control, including physical, verbal, cyber, and cell bullying. His accounts were hacked. He received ugly text messages and phone calls. It was awful. At this point, other administrators got involved. And it continued to escalate until one day my son received a terrible, terrible death threat. Detailed and gruesome, so ugly that he feared going to school. I reported it to the school, and they followed procedure and brought the two boys together for conflict resolution. Good Lord. Now the kid who threatened my son became a hero. And more kids began to threaten and mock my son. Every intervention made things worse. Mine, teachers, administrators, psychologists, on and on. Auditorium programs, ridiculous health class exercises, classroom visits from high school kids. Meantime, I was madly reading everything I could lay my hands on about bullying. I was up days and nights researching. I have a PhD, so I know my way around the library. I also sought professional help, child psychologists, well-regarded, and their advice was the same as the literature, ineffective. And when you watch your child sinking, helpless, into suicidal thoughts, panic, despair, I cannot tell you how terrible that is. Changing schools in his condition made little sense and was a huge gamble since, given the world we live in, the bullying was likely to find its way to any other school he attended, and I wasn't in a position to move out of the city anyway. In my son's darkest hour, I happened upon Mr. Kalman's website. It sounded crazy to me, but I was out of answers. He was the only one to sound a different note. It's remarkable how homogenous the bullying literature is. There was also a kind of common sense in his approach, a practical wisdom, and an understanding that the bullying literature simply doesn't have. The bullying literature is, in effect, literature about literature, rather than observation and analysis of specific cases, generally. Those that look at empirical evidence invariably conclude that the approaches don't work. What I came to learn, personally, and from the mountain of research I read, is that they do not work. They exacerbate the problem. They make the bullied kid feel terrible about himself, and they excite and expand the ranks of the bullies. But I can't say that I approached Mr. Kalman's method with great confidence. It seemed too straightforward. Well, my son tried it, and it worked. It worked instantly. One day he was bullied, the next day it stopped. He didn't even have to wait it out the way Mr. Kalman predicted. Kids immediately, weirdly, almost magically, lost interest as soon as my son acted nonchalant in response to their mockery. Frankly, this experience has had a terrible effect on my own feelings about human beings. We are a bunch of monkeys, easily aroused and easily manipulated. Let me add that Mr. Kalman's advice is not to ignore bullying. That's a naive reduction. Its real force is that it empowers the victim, teaches him not to take the attacks personally, not to own it. You must learn to respond to provocation with a different, empowered attitude. Nonchalant, unaffected, even mildly amused or surprised by the bullying behavior. That's easier said than done when your self-esteem is being pummeled. But somehow my son managed. He pulled it off and it worked like a charm. Truly like a charm. It has been several months now. He is no longer the object of assault. Now and again he gets teased, but he blows it off, and as Mr. Kalman observes, the teasing moves on in search of another victim. He has learned to roll with or roll off the punches. He's stronger, sadly, and less open to people, less the outgoing, funny, popular kid he was before all this brutality. No more panic attacks, no more depression. He's back on the honor roll. He's making very tentatively a few friends. He's taking an interest in his appearance and doesn't dread going to school, or no more than any teenage boy. I have the feeling that Mr. Kalman saved my son's life. Bravo, Mr. K. Glad to hear that someone is joining in this important work. Perhaps soon you can accumulate enough empirical evidence to have an impact on Monkey Island. The return letter from Mr. Kalman is, concerned parent, thank you so much for your letter, and I hope that it will spur others in a similar situation to visit my website and find the solution to their misery. My free manual, How to Stop Being Teased and Bullied Without Really Trying, as well as two other manuals, can be accessed at the Bullies to Bully site. He's also got a video called The Idiot Game that you can watch on the Bully site as well. So, I was very pleased to find this for obvious reasons. One is because it actually agrees with a lot of things that we talk about on the show. It agrees about some of the parts in it where they talked about not allowing them to take your power away from you. And I know that sounds scary, and I know when you use the power word, it sounds unachievable, because you don't feel powerful in that moment. But the truth of the matter is, it's just like everything else. If somebody looks at you and tells you you are ugly and, you know, so skinny and you look terrible, and you laugh at them or smile at them and say thank you, what are they going to do next? Think about it. I mean, really think about it. Or somebody walks up to you and pushes you out of their way, and you turn around and say, oh, excuse me. Again, what are they going to do with that? Psychologically speaking, anytime you can turn the tables and have the ball back in your court, you're the winner. I love this. I love, love, love this. And I think this provides a lot of very well put, very from the mom who wrote it. And I would like us all to check out this website. As I said, I will post it on my Facebook page. And it's pretty easy. www.bulliestobuddies.com. And check it out. And if you have something going on in your own life, let's go to a different scenario. Let's say you're a 35-year-old woman. You went to college, you did everything. You can have a career. But when you were 25, you decided you wanted to have a baby. So you had your baby, and you're lucky enough to be in a position where you didn't have to go right back to work. Now your baby's 10 and in fifth grade, and you're like, okay, I'm bored. I'm tired of being Susie Homemaker. I want to have fun with my family and everything, but I also want to express myself. So you go back out and get a job. Well, after 10 years, the work world has changed a lot. And it is very, very dog-eat-dog. And you're upset by that. And because you appear upset, people spot you like the weakest link, and they hone in on you. So do this. Try this. Turn it right around. And just like this young boy did, he even found it amusing, some of the things that they said to him. And when you find something amusing, the look that comes over your face is startling to somebody who thinks they're hurting your feelings or picking on you. I think this is wonderful. And I think it probably answers more questions than we've been able to answer so far. I'm very excited to have found this. I'm going to open up the phone lines and bring in Shelley. Hi, Miss Shelley. What did you think of that?
Wow, that was phenomenal. Very powerful.
Isn't that amazing?
Completely on target, and yes, and very, very consistent with a lot of what you and I have discussed. So,
yeah.
it was put together in such an understandable and cohesive way that it took a lot of our sporadic conversations where we kind of touched on it here and touched on it there, and just put it together in a well organized, very well put. I love the mother's letter.
Mm-hmm.
I love how he addressed or described what his website was all about. Both very eloquently put, you know, and I'm very, very excited about what you found, no doubt about it. Oh, and by the way, when I was talking about that I had heard a term for us to use, and I don't know that we can, I guess we'd have to get his permission, that's what it was, Bullies the Buddies.
So you've heard of this before?
Buddies, but I didn't realize it was a website. I thought it was a book or a movie. I had heard the term, but I never knew it was a website. And I had just heard the term, and I don't even remember where I heard it from. I think somebody else had told me that they came across it. But like I said, I didn't realize that they were talking about a website.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
But that was and I like the phraseology, because it addresses the problem and makes you look at the solution. If we can get people psychologically, if we can diffuse them, then you're going to take somebody who's poking you today, and tomorrow you're sitting down and having lunch with them, you know.
Yep.
That's basically the concept, you know, and I like that because it's it's both the problem and the solution, like in one title. So that's
well,
why,
and
that's
it's
why
and
I
it's
think confusing.
And it's just so simple, just so simple.
Mm-hmm.
You remember the I don't remember exactly how the saying was, but I remember my grandpa telling me, you know, he'd say to me, Mickey, whenever something's going on and you're confused and you don't have an answer, you can always smile. And I said, what is that going to do for me? And he says, it's going to make everybody think that you know exactly what's going on and you'll have time to think about it. And this is along the same idea.
Mm-hmm. But that's true. If you smile and nod your head, and I mean, I'm not patting myself on the back, but, you know, I generally tend to be, you know, fairly intelligent, and I can hold my own in a conversation. But if I'm not really 100% on what's on board, I will act like I am.
Fake it till you make it.
Because, right. Because people will then just keep putting out other information, and by the end of the conversation, now I am up to speed. But you know what I'm saying? Because people, if they
absolutely.
Think going.
Absolutely,
you know?
I know what you're saying. Yep, and I've
and
done that
like,
same thing myself.
I know. And it's, you know, it's a great technique for a lot of different ways. And you're not being dishonest because it is one way of pulling information in. But like you said, you just fake it until you make it, and until you get the rest of the pieces. But the bottom line is you maintain respect, you maintain the ability to be in the game with everybody else, and you end up pulling all the puzzle pieces in anyway, you know. But you do it by maintaining dignity and respect, and it's actually kind of fun, you know. But like I had told you before, is that when I was in high school, There were many kids that tried to bully me, and this is something we had talked about one night. And the reason I never really was bullied, because I absolutely recognized the fact that people were trying to be mean to me, but I didn't care. So I would do, it's just kind of instinctively because of who I am, I would always smile or shrug it off or laugh like I thought they were joking with me. Meanwhile, subconsciously, I knew darn well they weren't trying to joke with me, but I acted like they were. And it was no fun for them. So it was like, stop.
Yes, well, what you took the ball back in your court.
Yeah.
It was your turn. Once you did that and turned the tables, you became the winner. And let's face it, the real winner is the one that feels like they've won. It doesn't really matter what the other person thinks.
Exactly.
To be honest with you. It's very psychological.
I didn't suffer. I never felt like I was being picked on. You know, I wasn't unobservant. You know, I wasn't stupid. I did realize that there were some people that just didn't care for me. But that was based on their own insecurities because I was very overtly a very confident person, and people recognized that in me, you know. And the people who tried to bring me down a peg were the people that weren't so secure in themselves, and I sort of recognized that also. I recognized that they were being mean to me in order to bring themselves up a notch. So I wasn't mean back to them, but I also didn't own it. I didn't take it from them, you know. I remember once that I when I worked at Grumman Aerospace, which was a big aerospace manufacturer on Long Island, New York, and there was bullying on the job there, and people that and again, you know, I would have people there that would try to get over on you. It was a very chauvinistic type of environment, stuff like that. But I just have that way of handling situations, you know. And I remember my friend used to get so upset. Because if somebody said something unkind or like they were trying to belittle me, and I would do the same thing. I would like laugh it off or act like they were teasing me or act like I didn't even pick up on the fact that they just said something derogatory and just go on with the conversation like it was a normal conversation, and it would just diffuse and it would just kind of, you know, like fade away. And my friend would get so upset, and she'd say, "Didn't you hear what so-and-so just said to you?" And I said, "Yeah." "Well, don't you realize they meant blah, 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 blah?" And I was like, "I don't care." And it would bother her. She you would get all bent out
of
shape. Mm-hmm. And it didn't even affect me. And I said, well, you let it go. I said, I truly don't care. I said, because guess what? Now they're sitting there. They walk away. They're totally confused. They didn't get the reaction they wanted except from you.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get it from me. And I said, I guarantee you that's the first time and the last time they'll say something like that to me because they did not get the response. Now it's back in their lap. Now they're going to walk around frustrated for the next hour because they don't know what to do with it.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
And it this particular people that would act that way was really like just one shot. Because after that, they did act different around me, you know. And it loses something if you don't react to it because they're looking for, when somebody is in that place where they say something that's unkind, for whatever is going through their minds or their hearts that would make them do something unkind, they're trying to elicit a particular reaction. They're trying to elicit hurt feelings or frustration or anger, but they're trying to elicit a reaction so that they can get something off their chest. When they don't get that, bam, it's right back in their lap, and that's uncomfortable because that's not what they were going for. And that's why they will lose interest in continuing to haunt that particular person. Because now it just raises their frustration level. That's not the reaction they were looking for at all. If you laugh with them, or if you just act like the comment's a normal comment, and you just have no reaction. You know, you don't even have to laugh at it. Sometimes I was just like, oh, well, that's an interesting point. And they would look like they would get so confused. So I have actually applied this, not deliberately, it's just kind of my basic personality, but I have applied that in many situations, and I can tell people it absolutely works, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree. I mean, the minute I read it today, I was like, "Oh my God, this is perfect," and it's put together so beautifully, and it is so simple. The only downside of it that I can see is the fact that, of course, now that this particular person who has been a victim for all this time has learned how to how to curb it or get rid of it or whatever, that means that the next person has to learn this too. So in the perfect world, it will happen enough times with enough people so that there can be more observation of it and more people can pick up that particular technique and that way of handling themselves so that this really, really comes to an end. And it's perfect, you know, it's really perfect. But again, we have to somehow we have to make sure we share it. And, of course, people aren't going to believe it until they really try it.
Right. Well, that's why letters like from that mother describe the scenario of what she and her son went through. Because you know how many people will read that letter and identify with it and say, oh my God, that's exactly what I'm going through, or that's so much worse than what I'm going through, and look how they came out on the other side. I mean, because that was really a horrific story she told. It's like no matter what they did, it got worse and worse and worse. My heart was breaking for her while I was listening to the story. So that's obviously something that other people are going to hear, and some people's stories are going to rival hers, and some of them aren't even there yet. And they're going to hear that and hear how it turned out, and it's going to definitely be a source of comfort, a source of inspiration, you know, and all that kind of good stuff. But I was told about that. Now the two manuals he has, is this something that you can read online, or do you know if it's
I don't know because I didn't find that until later this afternoon, and I've just had too many other things going on, but tomorrow when things are a little bit more relaxed, I will go through and check that out, and any information I can come up with, I will put it on my Facebook page, and I'll give it to you so you can put it on your Facebook page, and I'll ask all my friends and family to share it, and it should help a lot of people. And again, hopefully, you know, some people think nothing can work if it's real simple, you know. So hopefully by reading the letter that was sent in by the mom, then that will you know, that will curb that, and that will, you know, make everybody at least give it a shot. I mean, gosh,
but you know
what do you got to lose?
Throughout a lot of different situations in my life, as a matter of fact, this was something I was talking about at work just a couple months ago, is that I mean, you know what I've done. You know what I did at Hippocrates, and I've done it at just about every company I've ever worked at, that basically I'm sort of a troubleshooter. And I come in and I identify where maybe there's some missing procedures, or there's a procedure in place but it's missing a few steps, so things aren't working as well as they should, you know. And
right.
What I have found almost across the board is that the fixes for what seem to be major problems are usually very simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that fits across the board, whether you're talking business problems, life problems, social problems. A lot of times, I would say the majority of the time, the fixes are very simple. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't take major effort. It doesn't take major intellect. It usually is a very, very simple step, and it's usually only one or two steps to completely turn a situation around. And again, like I said, whether it's business or personal, because I've seen it in both areas of my life, you know. And it's
I agree.
So that's why I love this solution, because the simplicity almost lends itself to being successful. When things get too complicated is when people get halfway through and give up. But this is so beautiful in its simplicity.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you don't have to search for that ever elusive, profound. Action, that profound
mm-hmm.
action that's going to turn everything around, like,
right.
you know, taking, you know, facing off with your biggest fear, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that. You don't have to go there. You
right.
just have to, you know, kind of take it in, but not into your heart where it will
exactly.
hurt you, and not
right.
into your head where it will overwhelm you. Just take it in and then let it go out again with a big smile. And just,
exactly.
you know, and I'm telling you, it's funny because when you said that about, you know, doing it with, you know, kind of unconsciously doing things like that, all the years that I waited on table, I'm reminded of times when people would come in and say, "Oh my God, you're the lady. We were here the other night, and all the guys at the table were running you ragged and driving you crazy. And how did you stand that? I could never do that." And I'm like, "Honey, I don't even know what you're talking about." And they look at me, "Don't you remember them? They were doing this and they were doing that." And I said, "No, I really don't." And just like
their perception, right? Not yours.
Yes. Yes, and I didn't care. I was doing my job, and everything else was irrelevant. It's just
right.
like the classes that I did with other overweight people at Hippocrates, and we talked, and when everybody else was unloading some of the terrible things that happened to them, and I couldn't think of anything. And I was like, "That's impossible, because I know I've been fat my whole life. I am sure somebody has said something mean to me." I could not think of anything.
Right.
I had to make up things so I didn't feel like I was, you know, not being fair to the other ladies in the room. So
right.
it does have a lot to do with how you absorb something and how you get rid of it. So
right.
again,
right.
this is perfect. I am so excited about that. And,
let me ask you a question. Is there any possibility that you might be able to actually contact this particular individual? Is there maybe?
Well, I don't know why not. If somebody else could write him a letter, I don't know why I couldn't write him a letter.
Yeah, because it would be phenomenal to have him ask him to call in one night and let him be interviewed, because what he's
mm-hmm.
doing is it's just absolutely
beautiful.
Remarkable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when he understands that there's a radio show that's dedicated to this, you know, I mean, I think it would be a good chance, if the time is there, that he would be willing to speak with us. I just think that would be wonderful.
Well, I think most people who are driven by trying to make things better, are always willing to talk and share.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't go into that unless you are. You don't
mm-hmm.
you don't put yourself out there. You don't, you know, you don't extend yourself unless you're really ready to be there for people. So my guess would be, yes, he would probably love it. And that's a great idea, and I will do that. And first I'll research the website and read everything that I can, and then there must be, you know, more than likely there's a contact, an email or something, or maybe even a message board on his site. And
yeah, yeah.
I'll identify, you know, heart to heart and explain a few things that brought me to this place and see if he'd like to talk on the show. I would be very excited to have somebody who's, you know, what's Michael Berganzi's favorite saying? What's simple is true?
Yes.
and this is one of those times when I feel that really suits the scenario, because
yeah.
we do, you know, one of our major flaws, we human beings, is our way too analytical minds.
Mm-hmm.
We have to pick everything apart, because if it seems like it's too good to be true, we like dissect it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know,
right.
And a lot of times that's that's its demise, because once
exactly.
we dissect it and can't explain it or still understand it, then we're afraid of it.
Right. Right. Well,
so
you're talking about like looking at things through a child's fresh perspective.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's why, like, I love being around, you know, my young nieces and nephews, because they have such a remarkably untainted, fresh look on things that I've looked at recently, and then seeing it again through their eyes and having a whole new fresh perspective on something actually makes me enjoy it more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's,
mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are around children, and they don't embrace that. They're not observant enough. And it's something I strongly recommend when you are around young children. Really listen to their observation and try to see things through their youthful approach, because it actually makes life more fun when you can kind of open up to and kind of get into your own innocence again, you know. Just because it's kind of gotten buried under from years of experience doesn't mean you can't tap into it. And when you do tap into it, you actually start enjoying things more.
Yes, that's right. Well, and like I said before, it's about not, you know, not overdoing it, just keeping
mm-hmm.
it simple and doing the best you can do and trying
right.
to be and trying to be good to yourself. And, I mean, what's better for you than not taking everything into your heart? Nothing. Anytime.
Right.
You can take a comment from anybody or any kind of criticism. Let's kind of change the scenario and see how it would work with this. Say you're a young worker, you just started a job, it's your first real job, and you're trying your very best, and every day you feel like, you know, you're getting better, and you feel yourself sinking into the groove, so to speak, and getting along really good with everybody. And all of a sudden, your immediate supervisor calls you in and says, you know, I've been watching you. I don't know why you're doing this, and I don't know why you're doing that. And instinctively, your ego jumps up and wants to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
And you get defensive. And it's not bullying in the sense of bullying, but it is bullying.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody who is, for all intents and purposes, in charge of your life right now, at least your livelihood, is, you know, is kind of attacking you when you think you're doing this really, really good job for somebody who's new, so new, and is trying as hard as you, as you're trying.
Right,
so,
right.
I wonder how that would work if you handled it the same way. If you looked at this person and smiled and just simply said, oh, geez, what am I doing wrong? You know, just tell me and I'll fix it. Not,
well, actually,
oh, my God, what
is...
are you talking about, or anything like that. Just something
right.
simple.
Right, right. Well, actually, that is the best way to handle a situation like that because, first of all, it's very possible that you weren't doing things properly, which is really the person that's trained you responsibility, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody
yeah.
calls you in and says that to you, if you start acting defensive, that does go against you with a
mm-hmm.
boss.
Mm-hmm.
All they want to hear is, oh, okay, well, how do I make it better? How do I do it right then? Can you explain to
mm-hmm.
me? You know, the minute they see that openness and that willingness on your part to improve, you've just made major strides now in
mm-hmm.
getting respect and in getting a different attitude back from that boss. So I can absolutely tell you from being on both sides of that issue that it works like a charm.
Yeah, I think so too.
I
think it's very good advice.
Yeah. One of the companies I worked at, I had two different women working under me. They both answered to me, going back many years ago. And I remember that the one actually made more mistakes than the other one. The one was Barbara and Dunham. Barbara made a lot of mistakes. But anytime I would bring anything to her attention, she'd be like, oh, okay, Michelle, I'm sorry, I'll fix that right. And she did. And she'd fix it instantly, bring it right back
mm-hmm.
into me. It was so effortless to ever tell her she made a mistake that, in my mind, she was just a wonderful employee to work for me, you know?
Yep.
The other one,
yep.
Anna, actually made less mistakes, but any time I would bring a mistake to her attention, she would flip out.
Yeah.
And it's like,
or argue with you. Argue with you about, no, you're wrong. That's
wife.
I did it exactly the way I'm supposed to do it.
God. It was just so
yeah.
stressful. And here she was actually a better worker, and yet I preferred the woman that made the more mistakes because she was just so easy to deal with and would
yep.
always fix everything right away anyway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
mm-hmm.
so it is great advice. It goes a long way with developing respect and rapport, and that same boss that might be sounding a little stern with you now will absolutely embrace dealing with you if you are calm and respectful and don't get self-defensive and hyper and all that kind of stuff. That just wears
mm-hmm.
the boss out.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know?
Well, and I've talked about this before, even on the show, and that is the fact that if somebody, you know, I brought in the work because I think that there's all kinds of listeners and some things pertain to one group of people and some things pertain to another. So I like to include all the different groups and show them exactly how advice can work in different scenarios. But most cases, if you really are being addressed because you're doing something wrong, you already know it. So, in my
yeah.
opinion, it's very
yeah.
rare that you can hit somebody who really cares about their job and you know, tell them that they're doing something wrong. It's when they're very young and when it's their first job and they haven't been around the block yet and they just think that they are just doing the best job ever because they're trying so hard and they're putting their heart and their soul into it. And we've
right.
both met young people like that. As a matter of fact,
oh,
we
yeah.
were young people like that. And we wanted to do what made everybody proud of us. And then to find out that they're not, like I said, your ego bumps in and you can make a big mistake. So
right.
before you do that, smile and say, oh, okay, can you help me so I know what I'm doing wrong, you know? And that, of course, endears a supervisor when they know that you're that willing. And
yes, exactly.
I'm not talking about seasoned workers, and I'm not talking about people who really know their job. I guess because right now I'm dealing with that here at home. One of the kids has just taken on a job, and she's just trying so hard, and she's so proud. And they wanted to hire her part-time, and they gave her 40 hours after 3 days. And
wow.
I told her, that's great. That means that you're really working hard. But already she's been having trouble with one of the girls that's been there longer and all that kind of stuff. So I counsel
right.
her on how to talk to these other people without stirring the pot.
Exactly.
And
right.
And we did talk about, you know, if she is just your peer and she has no no supervisory authority over you, you still should handle her advice like somebody who loves their job. And
right.
It's the same idea,
right.
You know, you smile and you say, oh, okay, you know, I didn't know I was supposed to do that, sorry. Doesn't mean you have to kowtow to somebody who's not your boss, but what it does is it keeps everything copacetic, and then she'll leave you alone because
exactly.
She was trying to bully you, and
that's
now
right.
She's going to back off because you handled it so beautifully. So it's all in the same line. And I think that it will be, for a lot of people, perfect, you know, really perfect for them.
Wow. I like that. I like that a lot. Let me
mm-hmm.
ask you one more question. Now, on the Bullies to Buddies website,
mm-hmm.
you said there were the two manuals, and you said there was a video on there?
Yeah, he says there is a video called The Idiot Game.
But you didn't watch it yet?
No, no. I haven't watched any of these, and I haven't been to that website.
Okay. Yeah, I want to check that out this week, and now I'm very curious.
Mm-hmm. Well, me too. And I also thought that we could probably, I can probably Google Izzy Kalman and just get more actual information about him before I pursue talking to him, because
mm-hmm.
I think that's the nice thing to do, first of all, is to really know about, you know, who you're going to talk to. And I think I'll find it interesting to hear about how he did this and what his background is. He calls it a Psychology Today blog. So my guess is he's a psychologist, but he doesn't say that. He doesn't have any kind of credentials after his name or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
So
now, other than the letter that you read that he wrote, and then the letter that he had posted from that mother,
mm-hmm.
was there anything else that you read with regard to what made him want to do this?
Well, he just in the very beginning, he just said, you know, they're doing mandates like what you and I have talked about. It doesn't work to tell people not to shoot people. It's not going to work to tell people not to bully people.
Right. But
so making the rules. Well, that's what he says. The modern world is trying so hard to find the solution for suffering of victims of bullying. And we are doing it by trying to pass school anti-bully laws as though a law can make bullying magically disappear from schools.
Yeah.
In fact, now pressure is being put on the U.S. Congress because
yeah,
they think
crazy.
The higher up they go, the bigger the mandate is or the heavier the mandate is, and it's going to mean more. And it's ludicrous. Well, I love this part. He says, but how can Congress make bullying disappear from schools when anti-bully programs have a dismal success record? And does Congress even know how to get rid of bullying within Congress?
Exactly.
So I love the way he thinks, and I think he's right on target. I mean, I really think he's right on target. He's in a place that is probably a little foreboding, because it's about Congress and it's about the people in charge and everything, and it sounds like he's maybe rocked a few boats. And but certainly his approach, you know, is the simplest, the easiest mm-hmm. on somebody's psyche, the easiest on somebody's overall well-being. I mean, at Hippocrates, what's one of the things that always relaxed all of the guests? The obvious stuff is meditation and yoga and massages and stuff like that. But you remember the Tai Chi teacher and the Qigong teacher that for so long would tell everybody to close their eyes, bend their knees, and smile.
Yep. That's right.
And at graduation, probably 90% of the guests that participated in that simple little thing would say to me, I can't tell you how much better my day would start, even if I didn't do any of the rest of the class. If I couldn't make it to class and I stood in my room, you know, kind of like let everything out of me, closed my eyes, bent my knees, and just smiled, my day would be better.
Yep.
So
yep.
It's very powerful. Very, very powerful. And yet so incredibly simple that too many people will think, oh, don't be ridiculous. That's not going to do anything for me.
Well, what it does is it sets the tone for the day. You know, it's like if you leave your house in the morning and you smile at the first person you see, you have just uplifted both your days now. You know,
yeah.
And it kind of goes that way. If I leave or if I'm at a traffic light and I glance over and the person in the car next to me notices and looks back at me and smiles, I'm instantly uplifted. If they look at me and then just kind of like turn their head away, it doesn't depress me, but it certainly doesn't do anything for me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if they smile, smiles are very, very powerful, whether you share them with another person or just close your eyes and smile to yourself.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the truth.
One of my coworkers at the company I'm working at right now had come up to me one day, and I shared this one night a couple weeks ago, and she said, you know, she said, you remind me of my dear friend. She said, you're always smiling, you're always in a good mood. And I told her, and I said, well, I said, I'll share something with you. I said, I'm not always in a good mood. I said, but I just choose not to share my bad moods with other people. I said, I keep it to myself. And I said, and it works out better that way, because I said, if I am stressed out or in a bad mood over something, which it happens to me, I'm human, okay? I said, and then I see another person, because of my choice not to share that with them, I'll smile at you, and instantly I feel better. It started
right.
to make me feel better by smiling at you, you know?
Yeah.
But other people are impacted by that. I mean, I have people come up to me all the time, say, oh, you're always smiling, you always cheer me up and all that, but I'm cheering myself
mm-hmm.
up too.
Yes, that's so, right. That's right.
It works in both ways, you know?
Yes. You know, we have a few minutes left, and since this has been such a really positive evening with some good input for people, how about you take the last few minutes and tell the story that you told me yesterday?
Yeah, that was quite profound. A coworker of mine had come up to me yesterday, and then she tells me stories from time to time that are kind of along the lines of what we've discussed. And we had been talking, I had told her that the night before you and I had discussed about forgiveness and compassion and how that's very healing to people that have gone through traumatic events in their life. And she said that a couple years ago at the church she goes to, there was a shooting. One of the parishioners' sons was a very disturbed young man, and he came to church one day and opened fire on the congregation as they were leaving church and ended up killing some of the people leaving, including these two 20-year-old girls. I believe they were twins, but they were sisters, and they were 20 years old. And, you know, obviously it was just heart-wrenching, and the pastor dealt with that for many, many weeks and months after that, counseling the congregation and counseling both sets of parents, the parents, you know, separately. Counseling the parents
right.
of the young girls, and then counseling the parents of the young man who was the shooter. And
now,
the young man
was still alive.
Yes, the young man.
He didn't
was still
take
alive.
His own life or anything. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you know, I'm not. I got the impression from her that he ended up going to jail, but he may have taken his own life. I'm not absolutely 100% positive about that part of the story. But either way,
okay.
whether he went to jail or took his whole life, the bottom line is he was no longer part of the family anymore. He was either removed because he was incarcerated or he was removed because he took his own life. That detail I'm not 100% positive about.
Mm-hmm.
But what
okay.
happened was about 2 years after the incident, the parents of the young women approached the priest, because they knew that he had also been counseling the parents of the young man, and asked to meet the parents. And he was telling the story to the congregation, and he said that he actually was a little nervous about that, but felt obligated to honor their wishes, and obviously would be there to mediate. So he set the arrangements up so that they would meet, and the two sets of the parents of the girls were already in his office, and the parents of the young man walked into his office, and the minute the mother of the young man saw the parents of the two young girls, she instantly started crying. And she just was saying, "Oh, my God, I can't even imagine your loss. I am so sorry." And the mother of the two girls got up, walked across the room, wrapped her arms around her, started hugging her, and said, "I have been so worried about you. We both lost our children that day, and I have nothing but concern and compassion for you." And it was so powerful and so profound, you know, for the priest and for the two sets of parents, that they could actually have such compassion for each other, that it was an extremely healing event on both sides. And it actually helped the parish to heal even more, knowing that these two sets of parents had such a forgiveness and compassion for each other.
Wow, that's really beautiful, and that speaks volumes about the release of forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
The release of forgiveness, when you talk about power and being empowered, that is the most empowering feeling that you can ever give to yourself, and that's
absolutely
forgiveness.
That's
absolutely,
right.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it's also one of the hardest things to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the hardest things to really, it's easy to say it. Obviously, it's
right.
It's easy to say, you know, "Oh, sure, I forgive you, no problem." Especially if you know, both people are still here and they're going to move on with their lives, and maybe they're still part of something together and everything, and you say,
mm-hmm.
"No problem, I forgive you. I know you didn't mean to do that," or whatever the case might be.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean true forgiveness. Forgiveness where you have to reach way deep inside of you and say, you know, this isn't good for me to keep this way in here, and this isn't good for them, and what good does it serve? What does it do that I should keep it in me and I should hang on to it?
Exactly.
I can't ever reach in and shine it up and make it more beautiful. I can't put it in a vase and look at it. I can't put it in a picture frame and put it up on the wall. It's nothing.
Right.
It's nothing. So if you can really, really forgive, obviously forgetting is always a different story. Forgetting isn't necessary either. I think anything that we have to forgive that's on such a large scale that is that difficult to do, to forgive, it's not something that you want to forget because it's a part of your life. It's part of the etching on your soul that will always be there. So I don't think that's necessarily something you need to do. But I do think the forgiveness is a wonderful thing and a very empowering thing. So that's my words of advice for tonight. And I want to remind everybody that I will post any information I can get about this www.bulliestobuddies.com. I urge all of you to check it out. And I urge all of you on some small scale to give it a shot. I don't see where you have anything to lose except for maybe somebody bugging you all the time, and that could be a good thing. So thank you, my Shelley, and for joining me tonight, and I hope to those of you, I'm finding out a lot of people are listening online, and I was surprised to find out that somebody that I met a couple years ago heard about it and has been listening. So I'm pleased about that. So to all of you out there that are listening, thank you. And I hope this serves you in some way. And I hope What does serve you, you share. So from my heart to yours, I love you and God bless and good night. Good night, Shelley B.
Good night, Rainey. Good night, everyone.